Today is June 4th, 2014, and this is episode number 257 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, real Yahoo. To get the story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You did that beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really impressed.
Yeah, I got through all those words and everything.
I know. And well, see, I'm impressed because it's been a crazy busy week already, because we started off on Monday with the keynote at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference.
Yeah.
And from that, we've jumped into doing interviews and podcasts, and then you had to take one for the team and go to Jim Dalrymple's party last night.
Yeah, the Beard Bash. It was or the Alt Beard Bash or the Alt. I forget what is he calling it these days. But it's his terrific party that he throws at the WWDC.
Yeah.
Have you made it to his party?
I have not.
I knew that actually, and I wasn't trying to rub it in. Actually, I wanted to give props to the band that he hires.
I've heard they're fantastic.
Well, yeah, they are, although some people might not necessarily understand their fantasticness. It's a karaoke band, meaning that they play actual instruments while drunk people sing. And the thing that I love about these guys is, first of all, they can sit there on stage and not react to all the bad singing. And I think that that's awesome, because I can't do it.
It's a special skill.
It is a special skill. But more importantly, their song list that you can choose from is 13 pages long.
Wow.
And so they don't really play any, or maybe just a couple, but they don't really play most of the songs very well, but they can play them all. That's incredible. And then they all switch instruments too. I as a musician, I definitely love seeing that. I mean, there's drums, keyboards, guitar, and bass, and there's three guys in the band, and they'll switch out throughout the night constantly. Like, you know, every song will have a different, one of the various combos possible with three people. So it's lots of fun. And Jim, it's just a great party that Jim has put together for WWDC, and always a lot of fun. That's why my voice is kind of messed up, by the way. I was, like, talking over the music.
Yeah, one of these days, I want to see a recording of you at an event like that, where people convince you to get up and sing karaoke.
Well, I have a new way to hide from that. I have a new way to hide from that. Dave made the point, you know, Dave has often sung at this event, and I never have, because I've got kind of an issue with karaoke. It's one of the many issues that I have in life. And Dave said, when someone asked him to if he's going to get up tonight, he was thinking about it, and he's like, you know, everybody should have the opportunity to sing with a band in front of people, because it is an awesome feeling. It's an awesome experience. It's good character development for at least some people. And Dave gets to do that all the time.
So you've created a plausible excuse.
I don't get to do it all the time, but I certainly get to do it, and I certainly have done it lots. So, you know, I'll leave my slot for other folks to enjoy.
Oh my God, you've created altruistic deniability.
Altruistic deniability, that's awesome.
Wow.
that's fantastic, man.
Wow.
Altruistic deniability. Yeah, but it's a good show, and this whole week has been really good. You know, there's just such a great vibe going on at WWDC this year. And you know, the keynote was lots of fun, and it was interesting, and we saw lots of really, really cool things. And, you know, it just seems like seems like we're in the middle of a really, really good period of being Apple watchers, Apple observers.
I agree. The keynote, I was really impressed. I was really concerned that we would go into the keynote with expectations that Apple couldn't fulfill. And for some people, of course, it doesn't matter what Apple announced. If we'd all been given free unicorns and buckets of gold, there would still be people that would complain.
True. It's true. I wasn't worried about those expectations. I was pretty confident that that we were going to see some really, really good stuff, and I think we did. Some of those things weren't immediately tangible to again some observers, but I thought we saw a lot of really exciting stuff, and more importantly, Apple laid the groundwork for a lot of things that are coming, and those things look exciting. So I thought maybe that's what we could talk about.
I think that sounds like a great plan.
Boy, that was a long intro to get to there, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Yeah.
Let's talk a little more in depth about something that we mentioned on the Daily Observations, which was the column I wrote yesterday for about
Apple and Google,
about Apple and search.
Or I mean search.
Yeah.
How funny. I was thinking search and the word Google came out of my mouth.
Well, Google is synonymous with search today, right? You know, let me Google that for you.
Yeah.
They have done a wonderful, they've done an amazing job of making the decision to use another search engine largely come down to wanting to not use Google's services. You don't use Bing because it's better. You don't use DuckDuckGo because it's better. You use DuckDuckGo because they don't track anything about you. They're not tracking you so that they can, you know, build these profiles on you. I guess there probably are some people that legitimately prefer Bing, but Bing is just such a me too product at best.
I tried to give Bing a fair shake, and maybe I did, but in the end I was like, yeah, I'm going back to Google. I just wasn't as pleased with the way the search results came back. Now with DuckDuckGo, the search results are far more limited compared to Google, but it's a different type of search engine.
It's DuckDuckGo does not have the resources that Google has. But there are people who, you know, they will only use DuckDuckGo because they don't want to be tracked.
Sure.
And you know, I only touched on this briefly in the column, but what I think we're seeing with Apple and search, and we're going to get into that, but what I think that we're seeing with Apple, obliquely disrupting search, contrasts so remarkably with Microsoft. Microsoft saw Google and thought, oh my God, we have to do what they're doing, because that's all Microsoft ever does.
Yeah, pretty much. We have to
do what they're doing. You know, when Apple wants to compete, Apple doesn't bring out a Me Too product. Apple does definitely borrow features for its products when it needs to and wants to. We saw a lot of things that came from other apps and from Android and from the iOS jailbreaking community introduced into iOS 8 on Monday. But you know, we're talking about a platform in the first place, the iPhone, that was completely and totally different and unique and, again, oblique to the existing cell phone market at that time.
True. Yeah, yes. When the iPhone came along, it was a break point where cell phones and smartphones before were very different from what the iPhone created moving forward.
Yeah.
And not just for Apple.
For everyone that ripped off Apple's idea, and then in its iterative improvements, Apple itself has taken ideas brought to market and popularized by competing services and devices.
Sure. Whether that's something that they decided to copy from the jailbreak community, or something that say Microsoft or Google did better with their operating systems.
Right. Right. So we have that contrast, and I think that contrast is fascinating, because what Apple showed us is the beginnings of thinking differently about search.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. The impression that I walked away with, or sat away with, because I was sitting after the keynote, was that Apple wants to take away the notion that we're Googling something or using Bing or Yahoo or DuckDuckGo or Wikipedia or whatever to get the information that we need when we perform a search. They want us to simply think of it as a spotlight search. I almost called it a Sherlock search, which is kind of funny because that's pretty much what they showed us was the comeback of Sherlock.
In many ways, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not about here's where the various pieces of information are coming from. It's about Apple is giving me the data that I need.
Yeah, Apple's giving me the data that I need at my fingertips.
Yes.
I don't have to go anywhere to get it because it's right there. I'm not going to a search engine of any sort to get movie times, to get to search for apps on iTunes, to get my contacts, to do basic lookups that are going to wind up at Wikipedia anyway, right?
Yeah.
All that stuff is just right there, and you're never going to Google or any other search engine to get it.
Yeah, so Apple is in essence debranding all of the search content and then rebranding it as an Apple Spotlight search.
Right. Apple Spotlight search. And so, you know, one of the things that we saw was that Apple is in fact branding, as you just put it, Spotlight in multiple new areas, right? In iOS 7, if you do a pull down search on your iPhone, it says search iPhone. And in iOS 8, it says Spotlight Search. If you go to Safari in iOS or Yosemite, iOS 8 or Yosemite, I should say, first of all, they just magically renamed the URL field the search field in Safari.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now Spotlight Search as well. And that Spotlight has never been associated with anything other than searching on your local Mac.
Well, that changes now.
It does change now. And then we have Spotlight Suggestions, which put, for quote-unquote common search terms, and we have no idea yet exactly how broad or how shallow or narrow, whatever, that term is being defined, common search terms.
And where are those terms coming from? Meaning, is it something that Apple is compiling, or are they taking data from other search engines?
My gut feeling is that this is absolutely information that Apple is compiling, probably based on our actual searches.
That's like a major step towards just being your own search engine.
Kind of, but it's like reverse indexing, though. You're not indexing the whole internet. You're instead indexing what people are looking for. And you're going and getting that information, and you're ready to provide it. And the examples that we saw for that, the one example that we saw for that was Wikipedia. So, you know, they typed in, this guy named Brian Kroll, typed in Ansel for Ansel Adams. He actually said, I'm going to search for Ansel Adams, but he only typed in Ansel.
And the first thing that came up was one of our interns. Weird.
No, that's Ainsley. Ainsley, not really. Not Ainsley. Yeah, yeah. His name is Ainsley.
Huh? When do you change it?
Anyhow, it's always been that. Yeah, yeah. By the way, did they make it back from the keynote yet?
I haven't seen them around. That probably accounts for why we don't have our usual buffet spread that goes along with recording the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so he was looking for Ansel Adams. He typed Ansel, and you saw Google auto completions, which included Ansel Adams. And above the Google auto completion. So Apple's not interfering with Google. That's the interesting thing here. Apple's doing this without interfering with Google. They're not putting a wall up and saying you have to use our search engine. They're just providing the information for you that's a little more convenient.
What an incredibly subtle way to take over what would be a good word? The mind frame that people have for performing searches.
Yeah, I think there would be a lot of resistance, just like there was resistance when Apple stuck in a flawed implementation of Apple Maps in place of Google Maps. There was a lot of resistance to that, not all of that resistance was based on the fact that Apple Maps was flawed. Some of it was simply, Google Maps is awesome. Why are you messing with that? Why are you forcing me to use your product? Apple would get the same thing if it tried to instantaneously force everybody to use found.com, the rumored search engine that they're working on.
Yeah, but this way that's not an issue because you're just spotlighting. And right, everything feeds into it.
Yeah, you're just spotlighting and there's the information and it's yours to use as you want. So above the Google autocompletes was the spotlight suggestion, which defaulted to Ansel Adams, and it had a blurb about Ansel Adams that was condensed from probably using Apple's own text condensing feature that they've had for years,
mm-hmm.
right? And a picture of Ansel, a photograph of Ansel, and if you want, you could just read that. I was like, oh, Ansel Adams, right? He was a photographer. I knew that name. Or you want to know more about him, you click on the link right there. It goes directly to Wikipedia. Do not pass Google. Google does not collect $200.
Yeah, how about that? Very slick.
Very, 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 very slick. And you're going to be able to search for, using all this stuff, you can search for apps on iTunes that you don't have. You can search for movies that you don't have. You can get your movie listings. You can, of course, continue to get your... You know, a lot of this stuff is all stuff that we were told Siri was going to be focusing on. Local search. And... Apple's executives at the time told us that local search was 80% of what people search for, and that's what they're targeting with Siri. Well, now we see that they're targeting those same areas with the addition of Google Suggestions. Spotlight Suggestions.
Sorry
about that. They're targeting that same stuff with text search. And... it seems like Apple is pretty keen. This is I think a dual strategy. One, enhance the value of the ecosystem. Two, deprive Google of part of its revenue stream. One of the most lucrative parts of its revenue stream, which is Apple customers. And deprive not all of it, but just a lot of it. Just depriving Google of some of the traffic that comes from people using Apple devices.
It's fascinating the approach Apple is taking, because this is clearly not a full frontal assault on Google, but it's a very clever attack.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, and it's not, you know, Apple didn't explicitly state any of this stuff. And this was, I was actually shocked. I didn't get my piece finished until Tuesday. Started it on Monday. I got it finished on Tuesday, and no one beat me to the punch. I was kind of surprised by that. So, and it could be, of course, because I'm wrong.
Or it could be because no one was actually really catching this in the way you were.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm not trying. I didn't in any way anticipate that being an attempt to toot my own horn. But I thought that the message was pretty. It was cook code, except for it was being delivered by other people. You know, they're telling us what they're doing. It's all there. And that to me, that was the single most interesting aspect of the keynote. That was the thing that really just sort of grabbed. I mean, there were all sorts of great announcements, but that was the thing that I just found to be the most interesting.
It was really interesting. Okay, one of the things that I found to be really interesting was the new openness that we're seeing, meaning less secrecy about what's coming with OS 10 and iOS 8, and specifically the fact that Apple said, oh, by the way, we're going to do a public beta of Yosemite.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's coming this summer. And of course, I'll be jumping in on that because that's just how I roll. I'm curious. What do you think of Yosemite Beta?
Isn't that Yosemite Sam's like lesser known distaff cousin?
Excuse me, I'm Yosemite Beta, the rootinous, tootinous Naga hide salesman east of the Mississippi. It's very nice to meet you.
Oh, man, I tried so hard not to laugh because I don't want to encourage this sort of activity.
Yosemite Beta.
Yosemite Beta. Yes, and actually, I remember when he was here interviewing to be a potential intern. Why did we turn him down?
It's the smell of Naga hide.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty, pretty harsh.
Yeah, and he kept trying to tell us that it was a real creature that they hunted down in Brazil or something.
Yeah, yeah, north southern Brazil.
Like, dude, no, it's not.
Yeah,
kept insisting.
Well, it is a rootin' tootin' animal by far, sirs, and I do not appreciate you denigrating my chosen profession.
We were apparently recording the interview.
Yes, well, we do that with all the interviews because we need to refer back to the comments, not only for deciding who gets hired, but also so that we can determine what needs to go.
We used the word hired loosely there.
Oh, very loosely. But yeah, it also goes into our annual holiday party.
It does. Plus, if they get lost, it helps in recovery later.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah. I was kind of surprised because based on his smell, I thought that we were going to be dealing with someone that's actually a Corinthian leather salesman.
Right.
But right. Nagas and Corinthians.
No, instead we got Yosemite Beta.
Yeah, we got Yosemite Beta. I'm sorry. I totally forgot where we were going.
We're talking about the beta program and the fact that Apple is opening up a major release to a public beta, which the company has not done in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, wasn't iOS 7 available as a beta to the public? Am I mixing that up?
Let's see. The 10.9.3 update was available to the public.
iOS 7, though, last year.
Yeah, I'm trying to go backwards from there. And, man, I suddenly don't remember.
Let me Google that for us. Let's see here. Oh, I hear the gardeners.
Yeah.
Isn't that like the fifth time you've had gardening going on in the last like 3 days?
Yes. What is up with that? I mean, seriously, I have had you would think that I live in some sort of radioactive jungle where there's just this rabid growth. I have no idea why these people are here. I mean, 2 days ago, I actually had to abandon the office because they were out spraying some sort of toxic chemicals. And yeah.
Now, maybe it was simply that iOS 7 was available to developers in beta form. My mistake.
Okay. And to be fair, I typically can't remember what I had for lunch. And you're asking me about a program that would have been from a year ago now, almost.
I'm sorry. What was that? I couldn't hear you over the the gardening.
Yeah.
Just gonna rub it in a little bit.
Oh man!
Don't they know we have a show to do?
Actually, anyway, yes, they do.
Yeah, that's the funny thing.
Yeah,
that's the funny thing. Well, we'll just go ahead and delete all this so that our listeners don't have to suffer through it.
I think that's a brilliant plan.
And the fact that your original point that Apple is was showing a lot more openness. Apple also, you wrote this up, they changed the terms of their NDA to something approaching reason.
Yes, that was both surprising and totally appropriate for them to do so, because they've had two things. They've had the wording of their non-disclosure agreement for WWDC, and then they've had the implementation of the non-disclosure agreement, and they were not the same thing. So what they did is they changed the wording so that it matches what the spirit of the NDA was, which happened to be the implementation. So developers can now talk about the things that we were all exposed to in the keynote event. What they're limited from doing is posting screenshots or publishing screenshots, and they can't do what Apple's calling full reviews. And I'm interpreting that as meaning it's okay to talk about how they feel about specific features and APIs and stuff, but what they can't do is take everything that they're getting from WWDC and turn around and create their own product reviews and then publish those in advance of the official launch this fall.
Right, which is still a great deal of control compared to any other company, but it is something approaching reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, well,
and it's a pretty significant change, because Apple has traditionally lived in a complete, within its own reality distortion field, where it creates rules that are kind of ridiculous. And most of us were sort of living through them.
Do you remember when Apple had NDA rules that were so draconian that that developers were prohibited from talking to each other about the features they were working with in betas?
Right. Not that they didn't.
Right. But they had to be very careful about when and where they did that, so that Apple wouldn't
yank their memberships.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was kind of ridiculous. Another interesting little change we got was the addition of app review guidelines that recognize the existence of Bitcoins and say that apps that allow transmission of virtual currencies — Bitcoin was not named by name — but apps that allow transmission of virtual currencies would be allowed as long as it is legal to do so in any area where that app is being offered for sale. So since Bitcoin and cryptocurrency regulation as a whole is still a pretty muddled mass, if not a gray area, mean that we're going to get Bitcoin wallets back on the App Store anytime soon, but Apple has provided the framework for the very first time that would allow Bitcoin wallets, and it did so publicly in the app review guidelines.
I was actually very surprised to see that.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like Apple was taking a strong stance against cryptocurrencies. I assumed because there just simply aren't real good guidelines from the governments around the world as to how to handle this form of currency.
Yeah, it's going to be years. It's going to be years. Years in the making. You know, we are just — this is what I wrote this week — was that we are just now at the stage where regulatory bodies are fighting for jurisdiction. So, you know, we've got years to go before cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and Litecoin or Dogecoin or any other coin is functioning within a functional regulatory framework. And that could mean that it therefore will be years before we actually have any Bitcoin wallets back in the App Store. And that's a shame because, as I've said before, I think that Apple should be working overtime to make iOS and iPhone the premier cryptocurrency hardware platform for conducting these transactions rather than hiding from it. And but we're at least on the first step towards that.
We
that's
are.
Good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a very good thing. So what did you think about this whole thing with tying iOS and OS X together, making them a more cohesive, like, cross-platform? Where I'm going with is the whole thing with being able to start, like, an email message on your iPad, and then when you get over near your Mac, that message just pops up there, and you can finish typing it out and sending it from your Mac.
What I think is that's a feature in search of a problem. To me, it seems like you take a lot of stuff that Samsung has added to their Android devices, and this is like about twice as good and interesting and well implemented a concept as any of Samsung's ridiculous things, and that still makes it a solution in search of a problem.
Interesting.
I mean, it's nifty, and it seems like if Apple can do it the way they showed us, it will in fact be impressive. I just wonder how many people are going to be concerned about starting a message on their Mac or iPad and then moving to the other one to finish it. How often is that going to happen?
Well, if my Twitter stream is any indication, probably more often than either of us realize. I actually had several people that I follow make comments after the keynote about how that was their single most favorite feature.
Yeah.
And that kind of surprised me. I mean, I can see things like I start a message on my iPhone and I realize, oh crap, I need to do an attachment and there's this other thing. And it would be much easier if I'd actually just started this on my Mac. And then I just sit down at my Mac. So I don't see it as a feature that I'm going to use every single day. But on those occasions where I do need it, it's going to be one of those things where I'm like, holy crap, I'm glad this is here.
Yeah, and I guess the people that do use it will love it. And that's great. And it won't get anyone else, and it won't get in anyone else's way. And that's great, too. I'm pretty humdrum on it, although Apple's implementation definitely looked fantastic. And I like the other aspects of continuity that we were shown as well. Handoff was great. That's what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Finally, we can AirDrop between iOS devices and Macs. That's, you know, about darn time.
Yes, and I feel bad being excited about that because that should have been there from the beginning.
Yes, it should have been there from the beginning. And then we also have Apple didn't include this within continuity, but Apple is sort of solidifying a lot of the features. For instance, we now have the same tabbed view on an iPad in Safari that we have on the iPhone.
Yes,
right. The Apple introduced a new tab view and on the iPhone with iOS 7, but it never made it to the iPad, and now that's going to be there. But the treatment of the search bar, formerly known as the URL field, that implementation is the same in Yosemite and iOS 8 on both iPhone and iPad. So you've got your favorites that pop down, and we didn't even mention that, by the way. That favorites thing. I just a brief note because I find this behavior so fascinating. There are so many people who go to a website. The way you use the internet is that you go to google.com and you search for Apple and then you click the top link, which is apple.com. And that's how you get to Apple's website.
I'm fascinated by the number of people that do that.
Yeah, I don't get it. I'm just going to go to apple.com. I don't need to go to the middleman. But I know that there are lots of people, a lot of people do that. So it's an interesting thing. Now, Apple has always offered or long offered the favorites bar, which is the little tab that I'm looking at underneath my URL field because it's not yet the search field. That has all of the websites that I've designated as my favorites. It's got them just right there for me. And that is off by default. It is something you have to turn on. And of course you have to add your own favorites. But now what Apple has done is you can still turn that on. I'm glad that they didn't take that away from us with their new minimal interface, right?
Yeah, that would have been a big problem for me.
Yeah, they very specifically said that the favorites bar that we're familiar with can still be reactivated. But now what happens when you click on that search field, you get a little pop-down sheet that has all your favorites with an icon and the name by them.
So they just added an extra click for me. They just made the favorites less less convenient.
Yeah, for you and me, yes. For you and me, yes. But for people who go to a website by searching for it on Google first, every single time, what they did is they provided a very visual way of seeing your favorites because it's got the large icons for those sites. There might even be thumbnails. I wasn't actually sure what those icons were. So that even the most diehard, I go to Google to search for Apple, to go to apple.com, user will instead see apple.com just right there, depriving Google of another click, another page view.
How absolutely fascinating. Because that was one point that where I hadn't really wrapped my head around yet, that Apple is taking away from Google some of their search control.
Yeah. Again, in a way that's not artificial and forced. It's just providing the information that people are looking for right then and there. And of course, we will still use Google to search for any kind of company that we don't know the URL for, obviously.
Of course.
Not going away here. Apple's not going to be killing Google with any of this stuff. They're just depriving Google of some revenue and information.
Yeah, it's the thousand little cuts instead of the big lightsaber whack. Have you seen people type into the Google search field, google.com, and hit return?
No.
I have.
Wow, man.
Like, their web browser launches, and the homepage is just that Google search page. And so they click into the search field and type google.com and hit return, which brings up a list of results with Google at the top. Then they click that, and then they do their search.
I am not sure why it is that you think that you should be criticizing the way I use my computer, sir.
The geek inside me just died a little bit.
I'm just, yeah.
Nonetheless, but you know what? The world is, you know, one of the reasons why we have jobs. This is something, you know, I long ago came to grips with. The reason why we have jobs is because we geek out on things that other people don't necessarily have the time to geek out on. So we geek out for them, and we're able to write and talk about it. And that's what they pay us for, our readers and listeners, by you know.
We're geeks by proxy.
They're geeks by proxy.
They're geeks by proxy. We are your proxy geeks. You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if people want to search for Google.com to go to Google, rock on. That's rock on. Anyway, so we've got this is the same experience. You're going to get this favorite little sheet. You're going to get that on iOS, and you're going to get that in Yosemite. So again, that's another aspect of continuity. And I also, I was really delighted to see that Yosemite is flatter, but is not flat like iOS 7.
Yes. Yes. That was a pleasant surprise, because I was honestly expecting something that was the uber flatness that we got with iOS 7.
Yeah, you know, we figured, and we talked about this a year ago. We saw the flatness first with iOS 7 because Johnny Ive had only been in charge of software interface design for, like 9 months at that point, 6 months, 8 months, actually. And, you know, they had to start somewhere, and they started with iOS 7. And we figured that was going to be coming to OS 10 later.
Sure, and it did, but only to a degree.
Only to a degree, and in a degree that works. For me, I thought that everything we saw was gorgeous. They've got those translucent layers for, you know, all sorts of windows that in a way that's not distracting, that actually serves a purpose and makes things like, for instance, having the title bar in a window be translucent so that when you're scrolling, you see just a hint of what is scrolled off of off the page.
How funny.
That's useful for knowing where you are.
Because my first thought when I saw that was, that's pretty. I hope there's a setting so I can turn it off.
I bet you that you will almost instantaneously grow used to it and actually find it useful sometimes in knowing where you are on a page.
It's very possible. And I'm going to do my best to keep an open mind when I play with that feature, knowing full well that my first thought was, I want to shut that off. But I think part of my apparent disdain for that translucency was stemmed from the menu bar. When Apple made the menu bar translucent, all I wanted to do was make that translucency go away.
So did I. I don't even notice it anymore, though.
Oh, I don't notice it because I shut it off as soon as we got the setting to do so.
Oh, we have a setting to turn that off?
Oh, yes.
Where is that setting?
If you go into System Preferences and then you go to Desktop and, what is it, Desktop and Display? Or Desktop and Screensaver?
Yep.
There's a checkbox in there.
Translucent menu bar. Look at that. Hey, can you do me a favor? Can you not tell anybody that I had to ask?
You know, my lips are sealed.
Excellent. Oh, thank you, man. I wouldn't want anyone to, you know, question my geek credentials.
Brian, I don't think that's been an issue. People just know.
You know, despite the fact that I haven't noticed it in probably after the first couple of weeks of using it, I did in fact just turn it off.
And it feels better now, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely menu bar is supposed to be solid.
Definitely
supposed to be solid.
Definitely solid.
Solid.
Hey, speaking of that, there's one feature that I'm probably inappropriately excited for, which goes along with this, and it's the new dark view that they're adding to OS 10. And
you were pretty stoked about that.
I was, and so much so that it actually disturbed me a little bit. So for those of you that aren't sure what that means, when you look at your menu bar, when you look at the drop-down menus, and you look at your windows, the edges of windows in the Finder, they're all a light gray color. That's fine, but there's a lot of people that are coders and graphic designers that would prefer to have a darker gray that is less likely to distract their eyes or glare, and is less likely to cause the misinterpretation of colors. And if you look at Adobe apps like Photoshop and InDesign and Illustrator and Dreamweaver, by default, from like CS6, I think, it's been a very dark gray interface.
Okay.
And that wasn't just simply a cosmetic change. That was totally on purpose. And so now they've done that. Apple has done that with the operating system. So you can have the traditional bright gray that we're used to seeing, or switch it to dark mode and have something that puts less strain on your eyes and will probably be more appropriate for graphic designers and coders.
Yeah, you mentioned before when we were talking, you said that you felt that this was absolutely aimed at the professional markets.
Oh, yeah. I totally believe that this is a feature they tossed in for professional users.
And I also think, by the way, that it was a feature that they first tested with a Logic, because a Logic Pro 10, Logic Pro X, Logic Pro 10, mm-hmm. version 10.0, came with a dark interface for the very first time. It went from being gray to being dark, and it's gorgeous.
Yes, and if you spend a lot of time in that application, it's actually much easier on your eyes.
It is much easier on your eyes. Much easier on your eyes. Yeah, I really, really like it. Let's talk about some of the other groundwork things.
Are you talking about things like HomeKit and HealthKit?
HomeKit and HealthKit both, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's start with HomeKit, and let's talk about, like, you know, there were the dual sets of rumors. The Financial Times said that Apple was going to unveil a home automation platform, essentially. I don't think those were their exact words, but...
But that's what they implied.
Yeah, that's what they implied. GigaOm put out its own piece saying that its sources said that this is going to be a lot closer to an expansion of the made-for-iPhone or made-for-iPod or made-for-iPad, depending on which MFI definition you want to use, or MFI... And where you take the initials and you put them together.
Yeah, I know you're thinking of acronym, but I wasn't saying it on purpose just to see if you'd come up with it. I'm sorry, yeah. I am a jerk.
You are just like almost as big a jerk as me. So yes, whichever.
Yeah, but my hair's not as big as yours.
Yeah, I'm. By the way, I'm not going to edit that out.
I'll talk to Sienna.
So whichever MFI acronym you want, that it was going to be an expansion of that. So that basically Apple would simply be certifying hardware to have made for the MFI or maybe some other label on it. And it turns out
it's in between.
It's in between the two, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not, because it's not an expansion of the MFI program.
No, it's a new platform where third-party developers can add in the components that they need so that their devices can all interact seamlessly with your iPhone.
With the iPhone being the central hub.
Yeah, the controlling device for all of these third-party products.
Including controlling the security of that connection.
Right. So now instead of having to use, say, 5 apps to manage all your smart devices in your home, you can do it from a single app. You can get the hardware from whoever you want, as long as they have set it up so that it's compatible with the system.
Right. And, like, I'd be surprised, for instance, if some of the bigger home security outfits, I'd be kind of surprised if they were willing to give up that control to Apple.
Sure. I can totally see that. I mean,
but I would be shocked if Philips didn't make its Hue LED controllable lights.
I believe Philips was one of the partner companies that Apple listed when they talked about HomeKit.
I have a sneaking suspicion that Nest will do the same.
I have a sneaking suspicion that's the case too, unless Google acts in some way that would prohibit that from happening. But I'm expecting to see Nest thermostat and Nest smoke detector controls in Apple's HomeKit bundles.
Yeah. And I expect there to be some new hardware that comes out because of this, both from new companies and from existing companies who are either expanding their offerings or getting into the game. And this basically gives you this central way of controlling all these devices, and where you can be semi-confident of the security. I would not, certainly not with what we know at this point, I would not say that it's hack-proof, because... it may or may not be hack-proof. I would be shocked if it was hack-proof, to be honest.
You know, I saw Independence Day. I know all you need is a Lombard PowerBook and a Unix command line, and you can hack into any advanced alien races.
Well, I think you need an ADC cable, too.
You probably did, but the point
using SCSI. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, as long as they terminate the chain, we'd be okay. But the point is, saying reasonably secure is the right way to go.
Yeah, and having that security be, you know, it's going to be in Apple's best interest to keep it secure. And that's a significant challenge, and you got to appreciate the fact that Apple is willing to step up to that particular plate. But so that was the groundwork for a new platform. It remains to be seen how many companies jump on board. My guess is that we'll see a ton.
I think you're right.
And, you know, including home appliances, too. You know, your toasters and your...
Oh, sure.
And your fridges and, you know, all that other nonsense. And then we've got HealthKit.
And HealthKit, I saw two reactions generally from people. The first one being, oh, that's all it is? And the second reaction being, holy crap, Apple just totally confirmed what they're doing in the health and fitness market, and we're going to see some crazy hardware soon.
Yeah, I've been in 100% that the iWatch was going to A, exist, and B, be a health and fitness tracking centered device. I've been at 100% for that for a while now, but now I'm at 101%, I guess. I don't know.
You turned it up to 11.
I did. It is inconceivable.
Inconceivable.
You're welcome. It is inconceivable that Apple introduced HealthKit for us not we're getting the iWatch.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the iWatch is absolutely coming. It's going to happen this fall. And yes, I'm going to get one. And it will be very interesting to see, as we have said before, if I wear it or if it just ends up on the shelf. If I wear it, and I think we've said this too, if I end up actually wearing the iWatch long term, Apple totally nailed it. Because if they can get me to wear something on my wrist all the time, then they've done it right.
Yeah, you're gonna end up loving it. You've made these noises, these mewling noises about not being interested in it, and
I have a track record, Brian. I complained
about
the screen size. No, I complained about the body form change in the iPhone when we went to the iPhone 4, and then turns out I loved it. Then I complained about the screen size change with the iPhone 5. Mm-hmm. Turns out I loved it.
The iPad Mini.
I was certain that was a stupid idea. I love mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so next it's going to be the iWatch. I have a really, really strong track record here.
Well, I have a track record too, sir, and I do not appreciate your maligning of that track record. I happen to be the rootinest tootinest Naga hide salesman east of the Mississippi.
I need to stop laughing.
That would be Yosemite Beta, Yosemite Sam's lesser known distaff cousin.
Right. It's why do people let us do a show?
I don't know, man. I don't know. And then I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it simply because I'm not a coder and I don't have. I'm enough of a coder to be extraordinarily dangerous.
Okay, then how about if I say, holy crap, I was totally blown away that Apple took the attitude of, yeah, you know, the coding language that we're using right now just really doesn't cut it. Man, we need to change this and this and this, and screw it, let's just make our own. And then they did. They wrote a whole new language.
Yeah, and it's been a long time since... it's been a long time since any company has done this. Most of the advancements that have come, like, you know, Perl and Python and some of the other scripting languages and whatnot have really stemmed out of the open source community.
Yeah, they're kind of iterative. Yeah.
Yeah, so Apple introduced, it's called Swift, and Apple seems pretty stoked about it.
Developers seemed pretty excited about it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're doing iOS development, if you're not doing cross-platform development, thinking about my friend Brad Hutchings, if you're not doing cross-platform develop, if you're just developing for Apple's platform, Swift is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I agree. Apple, they control the hardware. They control the processors, specifically. And they've been working on optimizing the development tools. Now they've taken it all the way. They have complete control over the development tools, so they can make sure everything works together as efficiently as it possibly can.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. We're in the middle of a golden age for Apple, and it's usually hard to see these things when you're in the middle of them. But I think that's what's going on. I think we're seeing a lot of really interesting things. We were shown at WWDC that some big things are coming. Tim Cook has told us that some big things are coming in previous events over the last year. It was a fun keynote, great vibe from the developers that were there. It's the coverage of this keynote. There was definitely some mainstream coverage along the lines of that this was humdrum, but I'm confident when I say that those people don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That kind of coverage was coming from folks who were simply ignorant and they're not Apple watchers. They don't understand what a lot of what was shown meant. And I don't mean that in a derogatory fashion.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying.
The rest of the coverage has been largely upbeat. Wall Street has been largely upbeat, you know, for considering the fact that, there were some standout hopes that Apple was going to release hardware. I would have been shocked, stunned. Yeah. Well, you know, I did say that it seemed like Apple streaming this event meant that we were going to see some consumer products, but I couldn't figure out what it was. So I shouldn't be too revisionistic about that. We definitely said ahead of time, once Apple announced that they were going to stream that keynote, we said that definitely meant there was some hardware coming.
Well,
I'm sorry, consumer products coming.
Okay.
And we didn't see any consumer products.
Well, I'll stretch it for you. We saw what's coming with iOS 8 and OS 10, and Apple introduced their home automation platform and their health and fitness tracking platforms. All of these can, on some level, be considered consumer.
Yeah, they can, but we didn't see any direct consumer products that were released or announced. We didn't see any hardware. We didn't see anything like that. And yet Wall Street pretty much took everything in stride. There was a run up on the stock in the weeks leading up to this event. Of course, part of that run up was definitely tied to the stock split that's coming.
Right.
And which is still happening, but we didn't see any kind of major sell off after the WWDC keynote. And so investors clearly took things in stride. It's actually gone up since then. And it's good time to be a fan of Apple's products.
It is. And I have another takeaway real quick that I got out of this. Okay, when Steve Jobs retired and then later passed away, there were plenty of people that said Apple is screwed, they don't have a rock star anymore. And oh yes they do. And his name is Craig Federighi. That man has the showmanship that people were equating with Rockstar. And I think he's going to be the main focus of Apple's keynotes moving forward.
I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that. I wonder if he's being groomed to take over someday.
How funny, because I've had the same thought.
If we start seeing him... when and if we start seeing him at investor calls or at the shareholder meeting, sure. That's when we'll know.
And no, don't expect to see that soon. Tim Cook has many years of strong leadership ahead of him. And so that gives Craig plenty of time to continue to strengthen his position in the company and build up to becoming that rock star leader that people seem to think Apple really has to have, which is not to devalue Tim Cook as a rock star leader. I think Tim is a very strong leader, and I think he presents himself very well in the keynotes and other Apple events. But Craig put on a show.
Yeah, fair enough. He did. And, you know, if it's, say, 10 years, it also gives Craig plenty of time to stock up on hair care products because he won't have time to do that when he does take over.
Yeah, and I just realized I had the most awesome way to explain why the landscaper showed up today by saying, oh, no, Craig's here. He needed to get his hair done.
What?
Hey, do you remember the skit? There was a guy with a chainsaw.
Oh.
That's okay. You may not have picked up on that joke, but all of our listeners did.
Yeah. No one picked up on
that. No, our listeners totally got it.
We're 2 hours and 49 seconds. 1 hour, 49 seconds. Let's hit it.
Okay. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet, both places.
You can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. I'm at geektales.com. And Jeff is at freshbrewedtales.com. That's all for this week.
Head on over to iTunes and rate our show, because that would be totally awesome. And we love you. Also, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
It was a funny joke.